You're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Friday Facts About COVID-19 featuring Dr. Bukasi Dubé. Join us every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. for a half an hour as we discuss issues surrounding the current pandemic, vaccines and distribution, dispel myths, provide facts, and address concerns. We'll also be providing updates about COVID-19 vaccines and discuss how we can build a better culture around Black health. Episodes will be available wherever you listen to podcasts, so head on over to thenumbers.fm for the link to the show. Now let's jump into it. I want to thank you all for tuning in. This is DJ Ambush, and you're listening to Ask a Black Doctor, Dr. Bukasi Dubé. We get together every week to give you the latest and most informative discussions around COVID-19 and other health issues that are plaguing communities of color. This week, we have a special guest. All of our guests have been special, but I will say, based on some of the myths that myself and Dr. Dubé have been encountering, this week's going to be really, really good. We're going to have an opportunity to tackle some of those. Doc, how are you doing this week?
Doing well, my man. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, good. I'm doing good, man. I'm feeling excited. I had a birthday yesterday. So, you know.
Oh, happy birthday, man. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. 45 years young. So it feels good. I was happy. I took yesterday and today off. This is the only thing I had to do today, having this discussion with you guys. So I'm really, really happy about that. I did get to grab some comics earlier. So you know what I'm doing as soon as we're done. I got to get the business. Why don't you introduce our listeners to the guests we have this week?
Well, so today we have the honor of being joined by Dr. Kimberlyn Heller. She is a phenomenal Portlander who's doing great work in our community rolling out the red carpet, the virtual red carpet. Dr. Heller, please.
Hello and good afternoon. Happy birthday, DJ Ambush.
Thank you.
I will say, I'm originally from Flint, Michigan. A Howard University undergrad and Michigan State graduate. And I did my residency at the University of Illinois in the College of Medicine at Peoria, where I was a chief resident the last year. So, and my focus has always been high-risk OB, as well as anything pertaining to decreasing morbidity and mortality among Black women. Mm. And I always like to tell my patients, it's a dirty little secret, and it has been for decades, that Black women and brown women tend to do far worse than our white counterparts. Only recently did it come out that now everybody knows. Right. So I love to try to do everything I can to dispel myths and to educate my sisters as much as possible. So I'm really, really glad to have been invited.
Thank you for bringing that point up, especially.
So I just want to say, DJ, sorry to interrupt you. I just want to say, go State, go. I went to Michigan State as well.
Oh, hey!
A bunch of my family members definitely went to Howard. We're originally from DC, so there's connections all the way around.
Connections all the way.
Well, thank you for bringing up that point about the mortality rate, especially facing pregnancies for women of color. This is just new. Honestly, just finding out some of the disparities that women of color deal with in the medical, in any interactions with their doctors, just for checkups, complaining about pains, migraines, whatever it is, there's always this idea that you go to the doctor and this person is going to give you the best care and make sure that all your needs are taken care of and send you out with whatever you need to move forward and conquer the world. and get through the day. And it wasn't until I was having conversations with my partner that I started to understand how different my interactions with doctors are from hers. Mm-hmm. And she'd be dealing with some physical ailments. And I'm like, hey, let's just go to the doctor. And it was like, am I actually hearing? Have I been listening and hearing what she's been telling me for years? I go to the doctor. They don't listen to me. I go to the doctor. I say this. It's like they didn't hear what I said, and they respond with something else. So was this something that, well, obviously this is something you were aware of before you went into the medical field, because just being a woman of color and having that experience yourself, How does that change the way you interact with not just your patients, but some of your colleagues?
Well, let me say two things to that. So my introduction to how women in medicine were treated was actually my mother. Growing up, I listened to my mother and heard my mother and everyone talk about how when she was pregnant with me, how she was treated so much differently than how she was treated when she was pregnant with my sister because she had gained so much weight. And so when I was younger, I said, well, I'm never going to let that happen. When I become a doctor, I'm going to make sure I listen to women. And then when I became older, I saw that, you know, number one, women in general are not listened to. It's much worse, however, it's the double whammy if you are a woman and you are a woman of color, specifically Black, Brown, or Indigenous, because then you're really not listened to. And on top of that, there's always these the myths that we don't have pain the same way or that we over-exaggerate our pain. And so as a resident, I didn't see that a lot in my residency, but I did see it as a student when I was a medical student. I did my third or fourth year in Michigan. And that's actually one reason why I tried my best to get out of Michigan, because I wanted to be in a place that had more women as my physicians and my teachers to really create an atmosphere where then women are listened to, and how to be able to take that atmosphere of women really truly being listened to, getting the best care, and take that wherever I went. And so, you know, for the time I was a resident, it was really important to me for me to tell my patients, you know, you're not just some random person. When that door closes, you're my sister or my mother, you're my family, and therefore I'll listen to you. And that has been helpful, because when you tell someone that you are my family, that helps to decrease their fear. They really do open up and tell you, you know, kind of what's going on. And then since I made that commitment, I have to go the extra step to make sure that I do listen and take and send them where they need to go, because sometimes the issues are bigger than what I can handle. And so how that's translated is, since I am, you know, a partial owner in my group, I've done the work in the last 10 years of being in my group of helping my colleagues to see that, you know, this is how I take care of my patients. And because I do it this way, my patients, especially the ones who look like me, feel heard. And it's important that you see them, because if you don't see them, you're not going to hear them. Right. And I think it was important because, you know, I'm the only Black person in my group, but we do have a South Asian person. We have a Peruvian physician as well. So we have some color. So of course they already understood, but being able to articulate the fact that there is a way that you have to speak to women and to women of color, and most importantly, you have to listen, was something that a lot of white physicians are never taught. You know, they're not taught to really take the time to stop and listen, you know, to specifically to women. Like, that bias is not something that ever was really encountered. And I don't know if Dr. Dubay can agree with this, but, you know, like I tell my patients, 90% of medical school is based on a 70 kilogram white guy. The other 10% is the rest of us. And so those of us who look like the rest of us listen more to those issues. And we make sure that we make it so that our patients, when they come in, they have that space to talk, because we're listening for those issues.
That is so true. I mean, I couldn't have said it better. That is. I appreciate that, you know, you came out and called it out and named it, because we don't talk about these things, right? It's supposed to be polite. We're supposed to be, you know, be gracious in saying all these things. Right. So having someone call it out, having someone name it like that is powerful. And I think it also empowers patients, right? Because they didn't feel heard. They didn't feel understood. They didn't feel listened to. And I appreciate that. So thank you very much for that, Dr. Heller.
Absolutely. It takes hearing, you know, these stories and understanding that other perspective to realize that there's an additional level of anxiety for women just showing up at the doctor and dealing with that. And what does that do to your immediate results? Just checking, you know, in checking in. I had like zero anxiety going to a doctor, and that's a certain level of privilege that I get to move with as a man. So yeah, thank you so much. Before we jump into the topics, are there any tools that you could give our listeners, our women listeners, on how to navigate some of their visits? Maybe some things they should be asking, or just different things, different ways they possibly may not have thought of before that could help them get the type of treatment and care that they should be receiving?
I think it totally depends on what the issue is. So if it's something where someone wants to come in specifically asking about contraception or contraceptive options, I recommend people have an idea before they go in of what they think best fits them. You can always go to the ACOG website, so American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology. There's a really good summary sheet of the different options. At least have that there, that idea before you walk in. Because I feel like the more we educate ourselves before we walk in, the better we do. Another thing too, a lot of people look online before they come in. And I know Dr. Bay can definitely understand, at least commiserate with me when we hear that I did my research before people come in. I like to tell people like, yeah, that's not research, but I appreciate you doing the reading. So I do recommend people read before they go in, but I recommend they look at places that aren't safe. So Johns Hopkins has a really good webpage where they do a great job of breaking down a lot of gynecological issues. Another one that does that is Mass General from Harvard. They also have a really good website where a lot of good questions can be answered ahead of time to at least be able to have something so that you know when you go to speak to the physician that you know they know that you at least have done some reading, you know, so they can, you can try to tailor it that way. Because you know, like your wife was saying, sometimes she comes in with issues and they talk about something totally different. Well, if she walks in there armed with an idea already of what she thinks should be you should be discussing and says, hey, this right here says that, a lot of times that does help to redirect. And I will say even for myself, because I am not perfect, I mess up and there's times I'm really busy. Sometimes those little edits or shifts back to, hey, this is the issue, is enough to remind for me to remember, oh, wait, no, I'm looking at my sister. Let me help my sister. And that's really important.
That is awesome.
I really like how you talk about encouraging people to patients to come in with their own agenda and bringing up that agenda. Because if you don't bring up that agenda, guess what's going to happen? The doctor has their own agenda and they're going to have their agenda. So as a result, your issues are not taken care of and you don't feel heard. DJ, we've talked about how chronic stress syndrome affects folks, right? And we've only recently started understanding the impacts of chronic stress syndrome. Now, going to the doctor shouldn't be stressful.
I agree.
Going to the doctor shouldn't exacerbate this chronic stress syndrome. Mm-hmm. And if you don't have an agenda for that visit, guess what's going to happen? That stress is going to go up because you're not going to feel heard. You're not going to be seen as an individual in that interaction.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Wow. Okay, this is great. I think we're off to an excellent start. So let's jump into some of the questions here. OHSU will be studying data related to COVID-19 administration. Why are we doing that now?
So what I want to do is I want to give as much time to Dr. Haller as possible because she's the expert on this, right? But before we begin, I have to give a shout out to Dr. Allison Edelman. Allison Edelman is the PI, the principal investigator of this study here in Oregon. I believe there are 8 sites in the country that were chosen for this. She's awesome. She took the time. I texted her last night. I sent her an email last night to say, hey, we're doing this show tomorrow. And I realized that we hadn't spoken to you. Can we talk in the morning? Can we have a conversation in the morning before we do the show? And she was graceful enough to send me her information. And I called her at 7:30 in the morning. And while I was having my coffee, you know, talked to her and she answered all my questions and she gave me all of my information about the study and why it's important etc etc. So thank you again, Allison Edelman. And thank you to Erica Hadquist who is one of the writers for this show who made the connection.
Excellent.
So Dr. Heller, please, the question is yours.
I am a member of a national group of Black female OBGYNs, MFMs, and some family practice docs who also do OB. And about 3 or 4 months ago, we started to discuss amongst ourselves that this was happening, that we were hearing more and more about our patients noticing an issue with menstruation after they had COVID. And a lot of the research that they're doing at OHSU now, the specific study, is regards to the impact of COVID vaccination on the menstrual cycle. And we have seen some aberrations. the thing is, a lot of times I think as physicians, when we first heard about the menstrual changes, we were like, well, that doesn't make sense. That's not how that mechanism of action works. However, the more we've spoken about it amongst each other, the more that we've listened to our patients and what our patients have experienced. And then, of course, when we realize ourselves, because again, we are women and therefore some of us menstruate still, when we noticed ourselves that we were having, you know, aberrations to our menstrual cycles, we started to really kind of figure out, like, you know, we started to look into why this is possibly happening. And when we actually sat down to look at the physiology of it, well, it makes sense what happened. We all know that your cycles can be changed for a number of reasons. I always tell my patients it's a multifocal thing. It's multiple issues that can cause us to have aberrations with our cycle. So if you don't get enough sleep, if you're mad about something, believe it or not, if you had a cold recently, anything that can jack up the immune system or your emotional system can affect your period. Weight loss, weight gain, these things can affect it. So you have your, and I tell people it's the way that my father taught me how to figure out how to do a medical problem is to do a flow sheet. I find I do the same thing when it comes to medical issues. So in my head, when I think about menstrual issues, I think, is there a systemic issue? Like, is there actually something structurally going on? Was there something going on psychologically? And so structurally, like I said, it could be hormones, it could be sleep, it could be something structural like a polyp or a fibroid. And, or in this case, or physiologically, it could be, in this particular case, something that is going to hit your immune system. So we know that COVID-19, the virus in of itself, has some pretty good effects on the menstrual cycle. So we've had stories of ladies who are in the ICU ventilated, who either did not have a cycle at all, or who bled really heavily due to the effects of the virus. And so if you think if the virus hits your immune system bad enough or hard enough where it's going to cause menstrual abnormalities, and of course you have the same thing with the vaccine that actually sets a really good immune response from the body. So we know if our immune system is attacked or is in any way, shape or form challenged, then that's going to have an effect on your cycle as well. And I think that's what I'm looking at the study and the information you gave me about the study. It looks like exactly what they're looking for is what we have been hypothesizing as to why this is occurring. My biggest issue is that some women have been having these changes in their periods, and people have been telling them, no, it's not the vaccine, it's something else. Well, the problem is when you do that and you tell people it's not something that they know it is, all you're doing is just adding to their fears and misconception about the vaccine. Right. It's better just to say, yeah, it's probably doing it, and then try to figure out why.
I really like your response, right? Because it highlights how, even if it's not information that we like to hear, we still need to do those studies. And that's the same thing that Dr. Edelman said this morning. We need to investigate these things. We need to get to the bottom of these things so that we can give patients information so that they can make decisions knowing very well what they're going into. Right. You also highlighted something very, very, very important, I think, which is one of the key take-home points of this show today, which is, yes, you may have menstrual changes, either changing in your cycle or changing the flow, etc., due to the vaccine. However, the COVID-19, getting COVID-19 itself, is far worse than the changes that you may experience due to the vaccines. So. Thanks. If, in short, a quick summary would be still get vaccinated because it's safe, it's effective, and you'll save yourself a lot of trouble from doing that.
Absolutely. And we do know too that the menstrual changes people are seeing, some people are seeing are very short-lived. It may happen with one or two cycles and you're done. That is not true about the virus itself. We do know that people who are infected, they can have long-term effects. And so it's much better to just get the vaccine and be safe.
Yep.
Yeah. I cannot underscore how important it is for us everyday laymen to be able to trust people in the medical field, especially now with so many myths and a lot of meme university graduates out here, populous. a colleague of mine was very, you know, reluctant about getting vaccinated, and I believe this was maybe about 8 months ago, and the concern was, you know, I want to be able to take the Moderna vaccine and not the Johnson & Johnson or the Pfizer because people in my family have reacted differently depending on what vaccine they got. So he went to a clinic, and the person that he spoke to was like, no, they're all the same. Don't worry about it. They're all the same. They're all safe. This is what we have available. And that turned him away immediately. Yeah. Immediately. And then finally, you know, he and I had another follow-up conversation and was able to find a place that could give him the particular vaccine he was looking for. And he felt better. And, you know, we just had a, you know, a better understanding of how important it is. Just be honest. There's so much confusing information out there. To be able to make sure you can trust physicians. Mm-hmm. And having physicians that look like you, sound like you, and are aware of our concerns is extremely important too. So yes, thank you seriously for that.
It speaks directly to what Dr. Heller was just saying about the importance of putting information out there, hearing what patients have to say and answering their questions in a truthful manner. Hey, could this potentially affect my cycle, my menstrual cycle? You know, yes, it is a possibility. And here's more information about it. So I really appreciate that. And I appreciate all the centers in the country that are looking into this because it's very, very important. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't want to harp on this too long, but it is amazing how anything can affect a person's cycle.
Yes.
What's more amazing is how unknown that information is. It's not like...
I agree.
It's not like menstruations just started around COVID. Since women were women, this has been happening. But for me to just find out in 2021, and partially tied to some of the legislation that's happening in Texas with the abortion laws, that literally anything can affect your cycle, it's like, then what are we even talking about? Everything can affect your cycle. So
yes.
DJ, I got to call you out on something here.
Give it to me.
It's called male privilege.
It is male.
That's right.
It is called male privilege right there.
That's right. You know, I try to spend a lot of time explaining that to my patients. You know, typically, because of the fact that anything can mess up the cycle, we don't even start to investigate why your cycle is abnormal until you've had three in a row that are abnormal. Because right. At least then we know that there's something actually going on, just because it's so variable. You know, so I agree with you. And that's why the thing like the abortion nonsense in Texas is so upsetting, is because, you know, did they have an OBGYN in the room, and specifically an OBGYN of color in the room, who could talk to the weathering effect of what it's like to be a person of color in this country, and how even something as slight as being followed around the store can make you so upset that you miss your, that you skip your cycle? Like, was any of this ever discussed? And, you know, the thing is, you know, it isn't. And it's just because the penis was in effect. You know, we have people who have penises who are making these laws.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man, Dr. Heller is calling it out today. She's naming it. This is awesome. I appreciate that.
It's the Flynn me. I blame my dad.
So just last week, it was reported in the UK that there were over 30,000 reports of menstrual changes related to COVID-19 vaccines. So this topic is gaining attention. And so that's a good thing.
Yes, it totally is. And I think the reason why is because you do have so many more opportunities for physicians to talk. You know, we talk through each other through social media. There's a lot of us who are talking internationally through social media. And there's more and more women who are in the field who are also saying, hey, this is an issue. We need to bring light to it. We need to be honest about it. And the more we try to hide the problem or obfuscate, the more likely you are to cause people to be mistrustful of the system and not get the vaccine. So it's really important that we talk about it. And it's what I think is really interesting too, is you are having different, like, yes, we have these 8 sites that are looking specifically at it, but you also have different organizations like organizations that look specifically to Latinos, people look specifically at Black women, people look specifically at Indigenous to see if we're being affected differently. And we're trying to make sure we get that information collated as well. So it's kind of important.
Yeah. So let's get to the big questions. The huge question.
Okay.
Will the vaccine stop you from getting pregnant?
No.
Are you sure? Absolutely not. Are you?
Yes. Sure? I'm 100% sure. And I'm 100% sure because I have so many patients now who are pregnant after getting the vaccine. So what we do know is that there really is no mechanism where the mRNA vaccine will impact either any formation of ovarian follicles or will impact the formation of spermatids. There's nothing that's going to change that. There's no impact of the vaccine on the mechanism of the fallopian tube. It does not affect the cilia at all to get the eggs down to the uterus like it's supposed to. Has no effect on the thickening of the uterine layer. Has no effect on anything. Doesn't affect the vision of the cells once the fertilization is processed. So nothing at all. There's no effect at all. Now some people have been concerned because they've had a miscarriage after getting the COVID vaccine. The thing is, correlation is not causation. Just because you miscarry, which by the way is always traumatic, and I always feel really bad for my sisters who go through this because it's so hard. But just because you miscarried after you got the vaccine is not because of the vaccine, or not because the vaccine could have caused it. Over 50% of all pregnancies end in a miscarriage, and we never know what happens. Mm-hmm. Most times it's just a mismatch of genes, which again is not affected by an mRNA vaccine. And I like to make sure I tell people, because this is something that's really important. For those of us who went past high school science, we remember the actual, you know, mechanisms within the cell. We remember the endoplasmic reticulum. We remember our ribosome. We remember our mitochondria and our nucleus and all the other millions of things in there. Most people forget that the endoplasmic reticulum and the ribosomes, those two are linked. You know, you need your endoplasmic reticulum to make your ribosomes. Your ribosomes are what you need to actually talk to and transcribe the mRNA. Neither one of these guys go into the nucleus. The nucleus is where all of our DNA is. So if these suckers can't get anywhere near the nucleus, there's no impact on DNA, and therefore there's no impact on reproduction.
That's straight up high school biology right there.
Right? I don't know, Doc. All I see on the internet right now is that the vaccine is changing our DNA. And, you know, I mean, let me be clear. I'm not meaning to laugh or poke fun at people that believe these things. I just need you guys to understand there is a difference. Mm-hmm. I'm so, so happy you said it earlier. There's a difference between reading and research.
Yes.
And we do not, the most of us in the citizenry here with limited access to laboratories, we do not have the resources or finances to conduct our own research.
Yes.
We just don't. And in reading, you got to be careful about what you're reading, where you're finding it,
the sources, the validity of the sources.
Yes.
And why those people, those sources are producing that information, right? It's going by validity, right?
Yes. You know, there's also a misconception that a lot of physicians don't understand science. I don't know where this came from, but I think that people need to understand, and what I try to explain to my patients is most of us, especially if you think about Black and Brown physicians, we always have to work twice as hard to get, you know, just the lowest labor specs. So most of us, because of that, have had to do twice as much even before we even got to med school. I was a lab rat. I was a lab rat when I was at Howard. I worked at the FDA for a little bit. You know, every chance I got, I was doing some sort of research. My plan was, if I didn't get to med school, I was going to be a researcher in microbiology, virology, because that was my second love. So, and I mean, that story is not just unique to me. That's the majority of us. So when you're talking about virology, microbiology, that's my jam. You know, and I'm gonna talk to you about that. I will bore you about, you know, and like I try to tell people all the time, like back when Dr. Bay, when you and I were in med school years ago, you know, I don't know if you remember the Human Genome Project. The Human Genome Project was a huge thing during the end of the 80s, the mid 90s, early 2000s. And what people don't understand is that all the science that we have right now has built on the science of Human Genome Project, being able to go through and get the RNA the way that we have it, or to understand what the virus looks like, what their genetic component is, that's built on the Human Genome Project. And so I have to explain to people a lot of time when people are like, well, you know, this just came out of nowhere. I have to explain to them, like, this took 15 years longer to get to fruition.
Right.
People don't talk about, people don't even, the name Jennifer Doudna should be, I mean, she won the Nobel Prize last year in medicine and physiology because of the work on mRNA technology.
Yes. And
most of this work was done back 20, 30 years ago. And so when people say, oh, they created mRNA just to make these vaccines, oh, they created, you know, this is new technology, it's never been tried before. It shows a lack of understanding. Yes, I respect where you are as an individual, right? I respect how you see the world. In that respect, allow me, the scientist, the physician, to educate you on your misconceptions, on to educate you on, to correct maybe the things that you read, or maybe having seen, you know, having read some of Nicki Minaj's things, or read Dr. Google's things, have someone like, have someone who's who's a scientist, who's a physician, explain these things to you in a manner that will break it down so that you can understand what's going on.
Right. Yeah. And I think that part's important, the ability to break things down. Not all physicians are equally good at breaking things down.
Oh, that is so true. That is so true. I love how you went back to basic high school biology. I'm like, yay!
Well, I mean, we'd have a much easier job trusting the vaccine if y'all wouldn't put magnets in it. So I'm going to move forward for that. No, but seriously.
There are no magnets in this.
Please,
you will not be magnetic. Otherwise, you know, we would have 3 billion people.
Right.
Magnetic right now. So no magnets in this vaccine.
I can touch on a little bit of where the distrust has come from. And it's definitely from, of course, there are political motivations, of course. But you have people that are presenting themselves as doctors, right, saying some really, really wild things. And the actual doctors, you guys aren't spending time in front of podiums because you're just working. You're right, getting the work done. You're not seeking any type of honor or celebratory reception. You're just trying to get the work done. So while you're over here solving the crisis, actually putting in the work, there are a bunch of people on the other side that aren't doing anything but are full mouthpieces for misinformation.
Exactly.
So once we start hearing all these conflicting stories, it's like, oh, you can't trust the doctors. They don't know anything. Yeah. and that's how we ended up where we are now.
So I have two replies to that. One is 96%. If 96% of physicians are telling you the same thing, listen to the 96. Don't listen to 4%. Something might be wrong with them.
Right.
And the second thing is, what do you call the person who graduates last in their class in med school? Doctor. we're not all built the same. There's a reason why there are those of us who are towards the top of the class, and there are some who are not. There's a reason.
Right. Oh, man.
And the other thing, you bring up something very, very interesting, right? Which is 96%. Listen to the 96%. And guess what? Physicians are vaccinated at about 96%. 96% of physicians are vaccinated.
Wow.
So I know for a fact, if 96% of pilots are saying, hey, this is, you should fly in this plane.
Yeah.
Guess what? I'm flying in that plane.
Yeah. I'm not going to do my own research.
No. I don't need to do any research. If 96% are saying, go this way, I'm going that way. Because they're the experts in that industry.
Right.
So in this case, 96% of physicians are not just saying, get vaccinated. They themselves got vaccinated.
Yes.
So follow suit.
And also 2% of all physicians in the United States are Black. Of those 2% of physicians, 98% of us are vaccinated. What does that tell you? Come on now.
Wow.
Come on, Black people. We need to do this together.
Okay. This is so good. Okay. Dr. Heller, before we close out, are there any things, any final thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with, based on some of the interactions you may have had with your patients, women of color, anything that you would like to speak to before we close out?
I will say that, first of all, whenever any woman who comes to the door, that is my sister from that point on. But my sisters of color really they touch my heart in a different way, because we all have that same experience and the same fears. And so one thing I try to empower my sisters to do is, when you go into that office and you see that physician, we know if they see us, if you know what I mean. We know. So if you don't feel comfortable, it is okay to take your brown behind and your green money someplace else, as my mother used to say. You know, medicine is not a service industry, so to speak. It's not like going to a store, but it is important that you feel safe where you are, and you feel trust the person who you're talking to. So as my mother used to say, trust but verify. So if you talk to this person, you feel like you have a good relationship, but you're not quite sure what they say, it's okay to get a second opinion. If you're able to get someone who looks like you, do it. It's worthwhile. But don't just take one person's advice, especially if you have a bad feeling about it. Get a second opinion. It is okay. Even if you go for me and get a second opinion, it's totally fine.
That is awesome. Thank you both so much. Dr. Heller, it was a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much.
It was awesome. This is, you know, I love how you shoot straight. I really appreciate that. So it's, we've laughed way more than we've ever have during this time.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. All right. So thank you all for tuning in. I hope you got a wealth of information from this episode. As always, we'll have additional information in the episode description, and we will see you next week.
Thank you.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Ask a Black Doctor, airing every Friday at 8 a.m. and 2 p.m. right here on The Numbers. If you missed it, you can find the link to the full episodes on our website at thenumbers.fm. You can also subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms. Be sure to rate and leave a comment. If you have questions you'd like answered on future episodes, you can submit them through our website or the link in our bio on Instagram and Twitter.